National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DiMello talks with Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton about Pope Francis's first few weeks in the papacy. Also, Dan Burke is here. He'll be talking with EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan, about liturgy, popular piety, and the Church's Magisterium. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Dan Burke, Executive Director of the Register, and Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the Register. Hey, Jeanette, a happy Easter season to you.
Happy Easter to you too, Tom.
We are also glad to welcome Edward Penton back to Register Radio. He is the Register's Rome correspondent. He has covered the Register's Vatican News for the past 10 years. Also, prior to his work with the Register, Edward reported for Vatican Radio. His work has also appeared in Newsweek, Newsmax, Zenit, among other publications. And the last few weeks have brought many surprises in Rome, and now the ordinary work of our new pontiff begins, and this season Vaticanista will tell us what we just might expect. Edward, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Happy Easter to you.
Thank you.
Edward, it's been a busy 6 weeks for you, probably the busiest you've seen at the Vatican yet. What have been some of the highlights, the most remarkable moments of the last 6 weeks?
Right, Jeanette, yes, it has been a remarkable time, as I'm sure your listeners will agree. I think, obviously, the first thing which sticks in one's mind, of course, is the announcement of the Pope's resignation, Pope Benedict's resignation, and that was incredible. I mean, it came so much out of the blue, but then one also saw the grace and the confidence with which he handled that whole issue, and the way he just sort of was so confident in his decision, and that sticks in one's mind as well. And then, of course, Pope Francis's appearance on the balcony of the loggia, which was a very momentous time, and a way which showed such humility as well as Benedict and his resignation. So that was another thing that stuck in one's mind, and I think overall, it's the humility, I think, of both Benedict and Francis that I think it strikes one, and it's a sort of a lasting memory of the whole time. Just the great meekness, but in that sense, the greatness of both men, which comes across. And I think that's hopefully something that everyone will remember, because we really have been blessed with two great popes.
Absolutely. From what you've seen so far, how would you describe Pope Francis's presence at the Vatican? What's his style? What does it feel like to be there with him?
It feels very much like, somebody put it, he's very much like a sort of parish priest, really. He's not, as everyone knows, he described himself, first of all, as the Bishop of Rome rather than the Pope when he appeared on the balcony, and that's been very much his position ever since. It's been sort of to be very much with the people, and that's very much like a parish priest in that sense, and that great familiarity he has with people and wanting to be among them, both by his choice, for example, to stay in the Vatican guest house rather than move to the Apostolic Palace, and other things as well. All of these are clues to him being very much a simple pastor, really, and that's the way one feels about him. Not to say that Benedict wasn't, but it's just a completely different style in many ways, but of course the same substance.
Very good. And I guess this weekend, on Sunday, he is going to be taking his see. He will be at St. John Lateran, and that is the Cathedral of Rome, correct?
That's right. Yeah, that's where the popes actually used to live up until the 17th century, I believe, and then they moved to the Vatican and to St. Peter's Basilica and the Apostolic Palace there. But yes, it's probably the most significant church in the world. It's called the Mother of All Churches. It's where, as I said, the Vatican was based for many years, where the Pope lived for many years. And so it's a very important event, and the fact that he's going to take possession of it on Sunday also, which is Divine Mercy Sunday. And as listeners may know, this Pope, like John Paul II, is very much interested and has great devotion to the Divine Mercy, and so it's very significant for him in that sense as well.
This is Jeanette DiMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton. Now, Edward, you mentioned Pope John Paul, that both Pope Francis and Pope John Paul II shared this Divine Mercy, this devotion to Divine Mercy. What are some of the other similarities? There's been much talk about Pope Francis reminding people of Pope John Paul.
Yes, there is a sense, in terms of style, there is, in the sense that he wants to be with the people. Not that Benedict didn't, but he was someone who, as a professor, preferred really to be with his books. I mean, he loved to read and wasn't so much a people person in that sense. And so Pope Francis has that willingness to go out and meet and greet people. And as everyone's probably seen, his trips around St. Peter's Square when he takes babies and embraces the disabled as well, it's all very moving and very much part of his character, his sort of Latin warmth that he gives off, and which John Paul had too. And I think that's probably the greatest similarity there. But also, I think he is similar in the sense of his emphases as well, in terms of teaching, is more similar to John Paul II. That sort of, I don't know whether it's more that sort of warmth again that comes across in that teaching. But Benedict had it too, and Benedict, in the similarity with Benedict also, is that he's rather wanting to spend time looking at what people have in common, looking at aspects of unity between perhaps those groups which may be opposed to the neuralgic issues in the church, such as abortion and same-sex marriage. So he's trying to avoid those for the moment and try and find issues of commonality. And then I think those issues will come to the fore once people have grown to love Pope Francis, and then perhaps he thinks there's a time to tackle those issues. So that,
sure,
in that sense, that's something that Benedict did as well.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about these themes so far. I mean, it's been just a few weeks, but tell us the themes that Pope Francis has talked about so far.
Well, he's been, one aspect which is quite interesting about him is that he keeps repeating themes and almost drumming them home because he wants to get them across. And one of the key ones that he's talked about is to be outgoing, to reach out to others, especially the poor and the marginalized. And that's been an emphasis of his, which is he's constantly spoken about. And in fact, one of the most interesting homilies, I think, over the Easter, over the Holy Week, was the Chrism Mass homily, in which he addressed priests. And he said some very interesting things about how, you know, the self-help books are all very well and good, but it's not about being inward-looking. It's about going out to the world and reaching out to others and spreading the gospel in that sense. And he talked about knowing the odor of your sheep, being so close to them that you know the odor of your sheep as a shepherd. And that was a very strong strong message to be put across. And then he kind of repeated it again over the course of the Triduum as well. And the other theme, I think, which he's trying to get across is the importance of service and trying to say that true authority, true power is actually service. It's not about imposing anything upon someone else. It's about actually true essence of service, which is where the true power lies and where true authority lies. And I think these two themes are the ones which have perhaps been carried across most frequently in his addresses so far.
This is Jeanette DeMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton. It does seem as though he's really picking up the theme of the new evangelization.
Yes, and that reaching out to others is very much part of that, of course. And so, and also he's been very encouraging to the faithful. His homily on the Easter Vigil was very much, it was very pastoral in the sense that he talks about, you know, if you've kept Jesus at a distance, step forward and he will receive you with open arms. And he's, you know, he's very much trying to relate to people and speak to them where they are and try and encourage them not to be afraid, but to follow Christ. And that's all very, very pastoral and very in keeping with his character.
Now, in this last little bit of time that we have, I wanted to ask you a few things about some of the papal acts he's done so far. I believe he's made one appointment since he's been Pope. On Holy Thursday, he chose his successor for the Archdiocese of Buenos Aires. Is that correct?
That's right, yes, he did. Some noticed that was quite a quick appointment, and it was, of course. I mean, he'd only been inaugurated a few days before, but at the same time, I think that's probably an exception. I think he's said in previous interviews that he likes to take his time and he doesn't trust his first impulses. So I think we can expect more deliberation over other appointments. As you probably know, he's not reappointed. He's reappointed heads of the Vatican and the Curia, but only on a temporary basis. And so he's likely to make quite a few changes and appointments, which will be very interesting in the future. But these will probably come over time, and I think step by step. I don't think they'll come very suddenly.
Has he kept up ordinary business since he's been Pope? Ordinary meetings of dignitaries that the popes do almost every day, it seems as though they're receiving someone.
Oh, yes. Yes, certainly the appointments are continuing, and he's been meeting all sorts of people, I mean, mainly from the Curia, but also elsewhere. He met an important human rights activist who was very important during the dirty war in Argentina, who won a Nobel Prize. That was one key meeting he had, who he knew very well, of course. And next week he'll be meeting the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, which will be the first meeting with a world leader since his inauguration. So he's carrying on with his duties, but there's also quite a lot not going on when one doesn't see him. And I think these are times when he's really trying to get to grips with the workings of being Pope and what he's going to do in the near future. So there's a lot one doesn't see going on behind the scenes.
Sure. Well, Edward, thank you so much for giving this update to us, and we look forward to the next time we talk.
Okay, good to be with you, Beth. Thank you.
Edward, thank you so much. We really appreciate your insights and your expertise. When we return, Colin Donovan talks about something that happened during Holy Week. Is it a break with tradition or something else? Well, we're going to find out. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other, and our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Well, Dan, our next guest is certainly no stranger to EWTN listeners and viewers. Colin Donovan is here. He's the Vice President of Theology for EWTN and the host of our own radio program, Open Line Friday. We've invited him in to talk about Pope Francis and Holy Week. Colin, welcome to Register Radio.
Good to be here, Tom, with you and Dan.
Colin, there's been some interesting hubbub going on in the past week or so with Pope Francis's washing of the feet at the Mass of the Lord's Supper. And what I wanted to do with you today is to help bring a little bit of light and clarity into that situation, what's appropriate, not appropriate with the liturgy, the Pope's magisterial authority. I think the most important place to start with this topic is, what is the most essential element of the Mass of the Lord's Supper with respect to the washing of the feet?
Well, the context is, of course, the institution of the Eucharist on the day before Calvary, before the Passover began. And so in that context, there is also Christ giving the example to the apostles of what service to others is. And he said throughout his ministry, I came to serve, not to be served. And so clearly the element of the audience there is that it was the apostles who were present. There may have been others there. Mystics and others have mentioned Our Lady and, of course, the women that helped with the preparation of the meal and so on. So there would have been others present, but the audience was, per se, the apostles. And so I think that legitimately colors most people's understanding of what is taking place there. The rubrics themselves called for viri, Latin for men, for their feet to be washed. And therefore, the implication is that, well, when popes have done it, it might be priests or seminarians whose feet he's washed. When the bishop does it, it might likewise be priests, seminarians, but also ordinary faithful. And, of course, in the parishes, it would not be possible. You would have 12 men. And of course, there has been a lot of variation from the norm of law across the United States and elsewhere in terms of the washing of the feet of women. But the underlying tone there is one of service, of charity. And so this is what the texts themselves speak of in the liturgy. And so the priestly element is there, but ultimately the essential element is the element of charity. And I think this is the element that the Pope has put his emphasis on in the particular context of this past Holy Thursday.
Well, and as you say, in keeping with what you say, in the document Paschalis Solemnitatis, which governs the celebrations connected with Easter, number 51 says this: the washing of the feet of chosen men, which is the element you referenced,
right,
which according to tradition is performed on this day, represents the service and charity of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. This tradition should be maintained and its proper significance explained. So the emphasis in that section really is the representation
on
of the
charity. That this is what this is not only what ordained priesthood is about, but it's also about the baptismal priesthood as well. That it is whether you're a father of a family or a Christian working in employee somewhere. Positions of leadership should be positions of service. So it's a much broader example than for simply for clerics to observe.
What I understand with respect to the controversy about this in the past has been that there's been much liturgical abuse, at least in our country, with respect to this particular ceremony. There's been some expression of the desire for women's ordination or other motives that have worked its way into this ceremony, almost a statement, if you will, for those things by including women. So it's been used in some corners, right, as a means to make a statement. And in so doing, because it specifies men traditionally in the norms, have been essentially standing and operating in the face of the rubrics, if
sure,
you will.
Sure, sure.
Right.
But I think we have to distinguish between our own context in the West, in the United States, and to some degree probably also in Europe, although I don't know how that rubric is being used, as you noted, to promote certain ideologies within the church. But there certainly is the concern about that. But when you step back from that and you look at the norm itself and you look at that, the essential element, a couple facts stand out. First of all, rubrically, Rome has granted indults to various places. Now, someone in the Archdiocese of Boston can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's my understanding, for instance, that Boston and one other U.S. diocese, I forget which, actually obtained an indult so that women's feet could be washed, and therefore making licit in their case, since indults, whether granted for communion in the hand, are simply not transferable or grabbable by others saying, oh, well, they got one, I'm going to do that too. So I think that's a normative context, a legal context that ought to help us look at questions like, well, the Pope has done this, can I do that too? Quite apart from the question of whether popes can do things what others can't do simply because he's Pope. That's a whole other question.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking with Colin Donovan, the Vice President of Theology, a liturgical expert, on the controversy surrounding Pope Francis washing women's feet at the Mass of the Lord's Supper. Colin, you're bringing us then to an important point, which is the Pope's authority or ability to grant an indult or to himself deviate from the norms, if you want to say that he did, from a very strict interpretation. Tell me, what is the Pope's authority? I mean, with respect to the Mass, what can he and can he not do or change at any given moment?
Sure. And I'm going to go at this from the point of view of my strength initially, and that is theology and not canon law. And you will see this debate, I think, also of people who are following it on the Internet. You know, it's sort of like having a child who had an operation. You go to different specialists in the medical profession. You get a different concern from a cardiologist than you get from an endocrinologist or from a general practitioner. And, you know, there may seem to be in conflict. And I think that's what you get going here. From the point of view of theology, and canon law respects this as well, the Pope's authority is supreme. Most Catholics understand that, rooted in Scripture and in tradition, the Pope is the vicar of Christ, and therefore he acts with Christ's authority. Indeed, canon law could be reduced to whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. So theologically, the Pope not only could make this law of viri, of men only, he could excuse a diocese here and there from observing it, and if he wished to excuse himself, to whom would he appeal to do that? Himself. So this is the conundrum that we're facing here, and the Pope certainly has the authority to do it. There was an interesting comment which Father Zulsdorf, who has a blog, and he's someone who knows about these issues. He worked in the Vatican for a number of years, especially in the liturgical area with respect to the traditional rites of the liturgies. And he pointed out that an American canonist, Father Kamanchak, who's quite well known and experienced, in a blog in Commonweal, or in an article in Commonweal's website, which tends towards a liberal, it's probably not the same audience as the Register or EWTN, for example. He quoted something Pius XII have said about popes not being boundable. And he was almost positing it as a question of whether, you know, in the sort of the glee of people saying, well, now the Pope has sort of thrown off the shackles, we can do it too. People need to sort of keep their feet on the ground. And I think that's a good observation here, too. It's very easy for the mind to run wild and to not consider the Pope as Pope and what he is doing and his intentions in doing it, and to think that, well, now that the Pope has done it, others will be doing too. I think that's a prudential concern that people have, that this is a bad example for others. But I think there is another attitude, again a theological one. There's a principle in moral theology called epikeia, which says sometimes because the law is a general thing, sometimes the law cannot conceive of all possible circumstances in how it's to be applied. And so the just man, in other words, this presumes a solid conscience and a good conscience on these points, can choose to go beyond the letter of the law to the spirit of the law, not to evade the law, but to fulfill it in the intention of the legislator. Here we have a man who may not only be a just man, but is also the lawmaker. And I think we need to have a certain interior peace regarding this controversy, because obviously we will not be the one to settle it. He will be the one to settle it.
No doubt. And if there are to be any changes in the rubric or any emphasis, shift in emphasis in the in the governing documents regarding these celebrations, he certainly can and may make those changes. But the key is, we just need to relax. This is not the Pope going hog wild and throwing out essential elements of the liturgy. This is an optional practice in this Mass. And we need to relax and let the Pope be the Pope.
Yeah, and not just on this particular issue, but on other issues as well, where people have gone, aha, aha, he's just barely in.
Here's the key. We live as faithful Catholics in submission to the magisterium of the Church. We accurately understand, rightly understand, that the Holy Spirit is not napping, that the leadership of the Church is in good hands, and that we can rest in that and pray for our Pope and really just rely on his leadership in these sorts of issues.
Right. If the experts can't figure it out, neither can we.
All right. Well, I think we'll end with that. Colin, I really appreciate you spending a few minutes with us on this issue with Register Radio and EWTN. We're grateful to have you and to be able to bring some clarity.
Colin, thank you so much for all that you do for EWTN. And we'll see you on Open Line Friday. Don't forget, you can listen to the show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.